This is Let's Talk Synesthesia, the podcast where I, Maike, psychologist and synesthesia artist, meet scientists and synesthetes from around the world to explore the fascinating world of synesthesia. So come along and let's meet today's guest. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Let's Talk Synesthesia, episode number 15 already, which is exciting. And it's also the last episode of the month of May, which means we're going to pick a Cine of the Month story at the end of the episode. So please stick around, especially if you have submitted a story, because you might be the winner. You better stick around. So with me today is a very special guest, Candian Phillips. Hi, Candian. So nice to have you in my virtual studio today.
Hello. I'm happy to be here.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Yeah, I'm excited for this conversation. It's a whole new topic for me, which I love.
Even though you are a synesthete, when did you, is it really just the reel?
Yeah, it's really just that reel that I posted. And then you were like, hey, this is what this is. And I was like, oh my gosh. And that was it.
I love that. I love it. I shared the reel the other day on my Instagram again, but I'm just going to reshare it after the episode launched so people know what we're talking about. It was basically a random woman describing how she sees the year, and then someone else explaining how they see the year, and then it was Candian explaining how she sees the year. Then I texted you and told you this is sequence space synesthesia. We'll just start with our regular questions, and the first one would be, who are you? The big question of who are you? Maybe you can just tell us a bit about yourself professionally and personally.
Yeah. So I am professionally, I'm a licensed therapist in the United States. And you and I have talked about all the differences and what all that means between where you are and where I am. So the world of, I think, mental health and psychology, the different titles we have are varying greatly. So I'm a licensed therapist. So I don't prescribe meds. I don't do anything like that. I'm kind of what you would see on TV, doing the talking and the working and the person-to-person interaction, but not nearly as cool as the way they make it look on TV. And I've been studying and working in the field for almost 15 years. I've done a lot of different kind of just environments that I've worked in. I've worked in like psych hospitals, I've worked in schools, private practice, that sort of thing. And in the last few years, I've shifted my focus back towards adults. I was working with kids and teens for a long time, and then really got focused back into ADHD. And that was very almost accidental, doing research on trying to kind of figure out how to help some of my clients, and realized what I was thinking was one thing was actually ADHD symptoms. And I realized my own ADHD was a part of that, and just did the deep dive. And here I am now doing an Instagram account as an influencer, which is wild, and coaching services for ADHDers. So yeah, personally, I'm a wife and a mom, and I'm pregnant with my second, and yeah, just kind of rolling through life right now.
Yeah, beautiful. You're a business owner, of course, because you work in your own private practice, and I think you offer training for therapists to get more education around ADHD, right? And you're the founder of Humanity Hive, which maybe you can tell us a bit about that.
Yeah. So I do the training pieces, like you said. I as a therapist, I'm licensed in a way where I train other therapists who are wanting to get licensed. I'm partnered up with another agency where I'm training their coaches more on ADHD. And then Humanity Hive was really kind of a passion project that I started when I was leaving. I was working kind of government agency work that I'd been in for years and did love greatly. And then when I was making the switch, I knew that I loved teaching and I loved educating, and I was losing my ability to do that because I wasn't on a large team anymore. And so I just started doing Humanity Hive. And for the first few months, actually, it was not ADHD focused. It was more just like a general mental health thing. And I did one or two posts. I remember it was like in October of my first year on ADHD. And all of a sudden, like thousands of people joined my page. I was like, oh, well, y'all are here to see ADHD stuff. So let me do ADHD stuff. And it's just blossomed from there. I think it's a page where my focus is really to have a safe place, as safe as you can be, you know, on the internet. So I put a lot of effort into kind of monitoring the energy of it, monitoring comments, really just trying to make sure that people are able to come here, talk, learn, share, and not feel like they're having to battle all the garbage they battle as ADHDers in all the other pieces of their life. So
people should definitely check it out. I will put it in the info box for sure, so people can have a look at your content. Then ADHD really is having its moment at the moment, which is amazing. And it was very important to me to, as a neurodiversity podcast, to also talk about ADHD, because a lot of my guests are on the autism spectrum. So we spoke about that a lot. Obviously, we speak about synesthesia, but this is the first ADHD episode. And I'm very glad to have you, because I mean, I saw a couple news pages bashing the diagnosis in the last couple of days. Let's just not dive into that and just explore what it's like to have ADHD a bit.
Yeah.
And then a couple people send us questions about ADHD. But I think what we do first is look at sequence-based synesthesia. Let me just look at my notes and I'm going to give you a definition. Sequence-based synesthesia, or spatial sequence synesthesia, consists of visualizing certain sequences in physical space. And that space can be like the mental representation in your mind's eye, or even the space around you. And this can be the case for different concepts, for example, the alphabet or numbers from like 1 to 1,000, or the concept of time. And people visualize all of that so differently. For me, for example, it's the year. I see it as a time beam that starts at my left eye and then it goes like in the distance, and I walk along that time beam.
That is so wild.
What does it look like for you?
So for the year, it's like I've got this oval racetrack almost, if I'm giving you a shape. And January is tilted at the top and August is always kind of at the bottom. And so I move along it. So wherever I am, I see a different perspective. So we are in May. And so I'm on the right side, kind of, I'm still fairly high up, but I'm coming down my track. It's obviously brighter because for us, this is summer, so or spring, so it's brighter. And as I move down towards like August, it's getting lower and a little bit closer together and starting to get darker. But then I'm going to come back up when I'm moving up to October, November, December, and back up to January, but they're darker and they're a little bit closer. And that's the track I move around.
So cool. And if you think, for example, about, I don't know, winter holiday last year, would it be the same oval shape, or do you have like do you recycle it, or do you have a new one for each year?
I think it's the same, but if I'm just sitting here and I'm thinking about, no, it does kind of do that. I might not, it's almost like it's behind me. So I'm not turning around and looking at it from where I am if I'm recalling. So I'm in May, but it's like all that's behind my back and I'm kind of like I'm thinking back over that and it's still darker and it's still kind of behind me in that same shape, but it's back. I'm not looking directly at it. It's weird. Yeah.
I think that's amazing about all the sequence-based synesthesia, that you suddenly have like this inner space that expands, and we don't really talk about that kind of perception.
No. And I think I eventually had to like turn off the commenting on that post because it was so much, yeah. It was overwhelming my box. I couldn't find my comments from like my ADHD post to like respond to them because there were so many. So I had to just pause it for a little bit. But I think it's because we all assume we're seeing it the same way, or we're not even realizing that we're even seeing it. I think that's what's really thrown everyone off on that particular reel. You know, there were some feisty comments of like, no, this is how you see it. And everyone's like, that's not how I see it.
To bring in a couple more examples, I think some people also see it like from top to bottom, where like months are, well, just like a list in front of you. Then for others, it's a circle. Sometimes it's even a circle around your body.
Yeah.
Or someone described a wave. Can you think of any other?
Yeah, there were a lot of clock people.
Yeah.
There were people that talked of it almost kind of like the month was coming at them. And then once they were passed by, so it was kind of like this is going to age me, but it feels like a screensaver on a really old computer where something's coming at you. And then there were several that got excited when I talked about kind of my racetrack. They mentioned having that similarity. some kind of talked about, and again, this is going to show my age, like a Rolodex, the thing that you flip and the your addresses and stuff are on. I know. So they kind of saw it like that. And oh gosh, I think that's those were some main ones that I remember. It was interesting people trying to make sense of it because this was so foreign to them. So the people that panicked if they didn't see anything and wondered what was wrong with them. And then the ones that were like not exactly nice about it, but trying to say that however we saw it was basically how our kindergarten teachers taught it to us. I was like, I guarantee you I did not have a racetrack that was tilted and shifted in space and time in my kindergarten class. That's not how I learned it. So yeah.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting because we really don't know where it comes from. And I think especially since sequence-based synesthesia is just a bit different to the other forms, like for example, music to color synesthesia, that's where you have this inducer and then a concurrent, and they're both like a sense.
Yeah.
And then you can see in the brain that the music will activate the hearing part of your brain, but you can also see on the brain scan that the visual part of colors is also activated. So that makes a lot of sense, I feel like. That's, I think we can wrap our head around the idea of one stimulus will provoke two different brain reactions.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the stereotypical common way to form the title of a synesthesia, like grapheme color, music color, lexical to gustatory. Now for sequence space, we think or hear about a concept. It's more of a mental representation that just pops up immediately.
Right.
But it raises a bit the question, and that's what happened at a workshop I gave, where someone asked, why is it a form? Like, it doesn't really have these merged senses, right? It's a bit
right.
strange. And then also when you described all these different comments from people as well, like, where is the line when someone imagines, for example, a calendar? Would we still say this person is a synesthete, even though your race card? You know, that sounds a lot like, that sounds very personal. That sounds like what you came up with specifically.
Right.
So I would put you on that spectrum of sequence-based synesthesia. But now someone who happens to have that calendar association, are they also on the spectrum or do they just remember their calendar?
Yeah, I wondered that too, because there were a lot of people who commented basically a calendar. And my question was like, does that count? Or is your brain just pulling up an image because you've seen it, whereas I have not seen my racetrack anywhere? That's interesting.
Exactly. So it makes this distinction of almost, well, mine qualifies, but yours doesn't, maybe doesn't. It's a bit strange and it's a bit harder to study as well. So not many studies have been done on sequence-based synesthesia from what I've heard.
Right. Yeah.
Now looking at ADHD though, time management and like time blindness and all of that seems to be a struggle for many ADHDers.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like your race card year helps you understand or like keep track of time? Or does it hinder you?
I don't think it hinders me, but I, you know, if I'm thinking about just my day to day with management of time, like that's my big spectrum. That's my year. So I guess it would help me manage where I am in my year, but I don't know that is how I manage my just day-to-day time, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Can you put it into words how you manage like your day today, for example, Tuesday?
Like, is there an image?
Mm-hmm.
So for, if I break it down to like my week, what that looks like, Monday's the top of the week for me, which is always a debate of whether Sunday or Monday starts your week, but Monday starts my week and that's higher. And as I move into Wednesday, I kind of go into this valley and then I start moving my way back up to the weekend, back up to Monday. And I just kind of repeat this little, what feels like roller coaster ride. And then during my day, I was trying to think about this, like, how do I visualize my time?
But see, that's interesting because I have no representation of the week whatsoever other than my calendar.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's funny.
Already when you said Monday is at the top, I was like,
top of what? Yeah, like top of a little roller coaster, like a little hill. And then I kind of start moving my way down to Wednesday and then come back up and then we're at the curve again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
And then during my day, I don't know that I've got an image of time in my day. I've worked so long in a school system, and now I also track my son's school hours, which are similar. So I definitely have, I keep up with my clock as far as up until about 2:30 every day. That's just my time to get stuff done. So I don't know that there's a visual for it other than it's just like pressing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's weird. The other two have a very specific image. My day does not. My day is, it's just whatever it is.
To just talk about the other forms of sequence-based synesthesia for a bit. So we spoke about only the concept of time now, but other people see like the alphabet, for example. So if they maybe have to spell out a word, they would pick letters from that mental representation or numbers. There's one design I did with a friend where he sees all the numbers in front of him in like this very weird up and down and back and forth, and you can zoom in and out. And when he has to do a calculation, the one number would travel to the other number, and then they birth the result of the calculation. No, I don't know. I don't know how it works. I'm so bad at calculations anyway. But yeah, they travel around and then they meet, and then there is the result of the calculation.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Do you have any of that?
Well, my numbers aren't coming together and birthing another number, but. There is a way that I see numbers, but maybe it's not even numbers. Maybe it's age. Like if you were asking me for a calculation, okay, so like what's 9 plus 15? No, there is a little bit of a visual. Yeah. So there's this line. So I guess I keep myself at my age, even if I'm doing like a regular calculation. So I'm at 37, I'm living in the 30s, and I'm always having to look back down this line. But once I hit the number 20, it's like I almost hit this three-way stop. So like I hit this point and it kind of turns and it goes a bit diagonally towards zero. So for whatever reason, it's like, and I guess that's kind of childhood stuff. All those ages hit 20 and then we take this like hard right turn and then we're on the trajectory to 100 and beyond. So I guess I'm looking back and pulling numbers if I'm having to do something like that. If I'm calculating numbers, I always have to write them down. I cannot mentally calculate. I can't hold, the working memory cannot hold it all there. I'm trying to do it the way we do it in the United States, or gosh, the way we did it when I was in school. You know, you stacked, if I was trying to add 15 plus 9, which I guess I can do that in my head, but 15 and then you put 9 underneath and there's a line and there's a plus sign.
Yeah.
But they've changed math and it's blocks and I don't even know what that means now. So
they changed math?
They've changed math and I don't know how yet. And I'm terrified of when my son comes home and needs math tutoring. Thank God my husband's an accountant. But like the way we were taught math is different. Like now they've got these blocks. I don't know where it's coming from. I don't know if it's a China thing. Cause I know we're trying to pull how they do math in other countries and I've heard it being referenced over there. Maybe that's how they do it. There's this whole block system that blows my mind. There is no stacking of numbers and crossing and carrying over the one and that kind of stuff that we grew up doing.
Well, I can only hope they improved it. It needed improvement.
Yeah, I hope so. That's just going to be one that I pass on to my husband.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So let's look into a couple other forms of synesthesia. I think you also have month-to-color synesthesia, if I remember correctly from our previous conversation. Do you relate any other sensations to color? For example, pain or emotions? Or touch, like anything tactile, music?
Emotion, but I think that's more of a training thing as a therapist, like when we're kind of teaching feelings, or even almost kind of like the movie Inside Out, like joy was yellow and sad was blue and that sort of thing. So I don't think that if I'm feeling an emotion myself, all of a sudden I'm like literally seeing red. I think that's just more of like the way we've talked about it in school for so long. I don't think other pieces have color, but then every time you ask a question, I end up realizing I do. I don't think so.
I'm going to read a couple of examples to you from other people who have synesthesia and ADHD. And it's really interesting because for someone who has a lot of forms of synesthesia, but also these traits that are definitely more on the autistic side, like time management and everything and being organized and well-structured, all of that comes very easily to me. But I think ADHD and synesthesia, if you experience both of them quite vividly, maybe you struggle with it, maybe the combination of them can be just wild. One example is from Cece Hart. Some might know her. she's, I think, a quite well-known person in the synesthesia community. She's also involved in the International Association for Synesthesia. And she sent me a link to a story that she wrote about on her blog, which is really, really funny. And I can relate to that. So she has a formal ADHD diagnosis and she has multiple forms of synesthesia. One is grapheme color synesthesia. In her massage practice, she has a client named Jane, but she also has a friend called Janelle. And the names are very similar, especially when you look at them from a grapheme color synesthesia perspective. And she meets both of them on a Wednesday. And she confuses them constantly to the point where she would delete an appointment and fill it in with a new client because she thought she confused the two because she meets her friend on a Wednesday. I hope I'm giving the correct summary of her story, but that's the essence of the story, I think. And then she was trying to come up with a solution for it, which was, for example, taking the last name of her client to overcome that color consistency of these two. And then she named her friend the Italian beauty.
So for her, the way she was seeing the names is what was causing all the issue, because she was accidentally deleting one instead of the other or mixing them up because they presented the same for her.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's interesting.
So I think just a constant confusion. And I think I have the same with like bus lines or tube lines where the line is like red, but the name of the line is blue. And then you constantly try to make sense.
Oh, I can't do that. Yeah, I got lost in New York when I was very young because of that. Yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was by myself riding the line and I knew exactly what my stop was supposed to be. Like we had practiced it. It wasn't far. I was just going to meet them at the hotel. And I was probably, I don't know, 13 or something. But then the line started being a different color. Like you just said, it was the red line, but it was called it was blue or something like that. And I wrote it, I don't even know for how long, by myself, just like terrified in New York in the tube. Because I got so mixed up with that.
Exactly. And it just needs this extra effort. It's not like,
yeah,
sometimes there's a mismatch and it really needs a lot of focus to work around it. And I think that's what Carolyn also describes here. Another example she gave was medication. So she sometimes takes ibuprofen and she also has her ADHD medication. Now ibuprofen is white, but the name for it is light blue. And the ADHD medication is light blue, but the name for it is white.
Oh, wow.
And she described how she really has to focus to not mess up the doses of both medications, which has real consequences. Like, that's not fun.
Yeah, massive consequence. Wow. I did not think about just how much it could really interact with just day-to-day functioning like that.
And I guess as an ADHDer, you just find your own strategies. I imagine you have a ton of strategies during your day to just make sure things are working and safe.
Yeah, I think that is something that we naturally do without realizing just how, like, we can struggle to be adaptive, we can struggle with cognitive flexibility, but we have to do that for a lot of our day just to make certain things work for us, because it's just not set up for us all the time. Or, you know, that's why you'll see people with 1,000 sticky notes and a planner and a, you know, phone reminder and things on their hand, and things have to go in a certain place, which can get confusing. We're not like OCD putting things in a place necessarily, but just like for me to remember that this is where this goes, things have to have a home, not because something terrible is going to happen to me if I don't put it there.
Yeah, you just want to be efficient as well, because you have your goals and your passions and your business and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because my working memory would fail me if I didn't have some kind of system. So that's usually where that comes in for us.
Exactly. When did you get your formal diagnosis?
In the beginning of my college years, and even calling it formal, nothing about it really felt formal. It was a pretty brief conversation with a doctor that knew my mother had it, was treating my brother for it. And briefly after talking with me, she was like, yep, you're part of it too. So I think even for a little bit, I almost forgot that I had the diagnosis, to be honest.
Yeah. And when did you first start taking medication?
I tried a non-stimulant medicine after I met with her and I didn't feel any effects from it. So I didn't bother with it again And then I didn't start taking a stimulant medicine. Of course, Adderall was the first one that was written for me. And that was in mid-20s, I guess. Although actually my husband thinks he remembers that I was taking something when we met and I don't remember taking that. So I don't know what that was. There's no telling. But I don't remember really like focusing on taking this like an ADHD medicine until we moved to Greenville. And that was after he and I got married. And that's kind of when I felt like I really started my journey of trying to find the right med. And that's taken several years of me starting a med, taking it for a bit, abandoning it for like a year, trying a new med. But I have one I love now. I just can't take it because I'm pregnant. So I can't wait to take it again.
Oh, that must suck.
It does. It really does. It's hard.
I'm not pregnant, but I have the same problem of taking meds that give me the exact same effect I hear from people who take ADHD medication, even though it is an SSRI, so it's an antidepressant.
Right.
The effect it had on me was exactly that, where your brain all of a sudden goes in, it's like a traffic junction that first was just chaotic and had no traffic lights.
Yes.
And now it's orderly and slow and thoughts know where to go.
Yes. It's amazing when that happens.
So I can very much imagine what it's like to take ADHD medication for the first time and how much relief you must feel. And I think also grief, because what I felt as well was, wow, other people have had that their whole life.
Uh-huh. I could have been doing this my whole life. And I think that's there's a lot of grief, especially with the later diagnosis. And I'd say later, that's, you know, the average woman, I think, gets diagnosed around like age 37. But I've got endless amounts of women on my page that are in their 50s or later finally getting diagnosed. But for me, I think a later diagnosis is like you're out of school. Like no one caught it in school. For me, it feels late. So that could be 19, 20 years old. But yeah, there's a lot of grief and sometimes even anger over like, how did no one see this? I've struggled X amount of years.
Well, I definitely felt anger going to all those doctors and not getting what I actually needed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did feel anger and grief and also hope, of course, because you have a lot of your time ahead. So
right,
many emotions. It's interesting, though, that your mom, who was a generation before you, got a ADHD diagnosis as a woman. So someone must have done something right for her.
Yeah. And I don't know that I ever actually asked how she got her diagnosis. She would have been an adult.
Yeah. Still sounds pretty like unusual.
I guess so. She was also a nurse, so she had access to a lot of doctors. So I think that probably helped. To be fair, took medicine that she probably didn't need to take either. So that was possibly in the mix of how she even realized that she had it. But
right.
But yeah, so she had it, and there was no doubt when my brother came along that he had it when he was young. He fit the bill pretty easily. So
yeah, it's easier for boys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was the under the radar one.
Yeah, I can imagine. So we've received a couple questions regarding ADHD, and I picked two that I think are very good questions. One question is coming from Germany, and someone asked if you have any tips on how to stay focused, for example, when someone is giving you instructions, or you, for example, have to do a listening comprehension exercise and they tell you that story and then you have to answer questions and you just can't focus on that often auditory task.
Mm. So for me, auditory means I always have a pen and a paper. I need to jot down at least keywords. So even if I'm tracking along, I may not be writing literally everything they're saying, but words that are jumping out to me that can prompt my memory to remember what's being said around it, I will jot those down. And oftentimes for me, if my body is not able to manage kind of the distracting energy that it feels or hyperactivity, then I'm going to be lost in the auditory sense. So if my hands are busy, then I can usually hear better. So I was definitely the student in class and also the person in meetings at work that doodled. Some of my teachers understood Candon's doodling, but she's not off in space. That's how she hears me. If I tell her to like put pen and paper down and look at me, nothing is going to be processed. Whereas other teachers would think I was not paying attention. For me, because I think with ADHD, we're all different in how we manage that. That was a big piece. Obviously, medicine can be helpful. And then honestly, a piece that I think a lot of us struggle with is stopping them and asking them to repeat, or me going, hey, before you keep going, can I repeat this back and make sure I've tracked with you so far to make sure that I have so far understood what was being said.
That's a good one too. Yeah.
That's one where people have a hard time. They can feel shame or embarrassment about having to speak up or ask for it to be repeated or to clarify. Sometimes that's just because they had teachers or parents that would fuss at them for that. Other times it's just no one else should have to ask this question, so I don't want to be the person having to ask for a repeat or to clarify. But I've just learned, like, if you want me to do this well, or if you want me to carry this task forward, this is part of my process.
Yeah, that's great advice. During my studies, I did a part-time job at a test center for like personality tests and IQ tests and personnel selection and stuff. And the tip they gave there is for when you have to hear a story and you have to remember it, and then like 20 minutes later answer questions on that test, was to find objects in your surrounding and just put like, that chunk of story belongs to that pen, that chunk of story belongs to this plant, or to that screen. So then it's broken down into parts that now like have a relation to the object in your, I don't think it's good for like conversations, but for that specific IQ test,
yeah,
keep your focus thing, it was really helpful.
I like that. And if I think about something else that I do that I don't think I realized I did until recently, I work backwards in a conversation. So particularly I'll have a friend of mine that we will do voice text messages to each other a lot. She's equally ADHD, so we just will chat to each other. And I always answer her questions backwards. I don't start where she started her questions.
Yeah.
So for me, my memory, I can start from there and I can better track what got me to that question of answering and work my way that way versus trying to let my brain go all the way to the beginning of her message and work towards me.
Yeah.
I do that in trainings. I do that when I'm teaching. I find if I'm answering questions, I'm always saying, okay, I'm gonna work backwards. And that's how my recall is better.
That's great. And also just allowing yourself to do it differently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just good to realize that about yourself and then just do it.
Yeah.
That's cool. For me, if I hear instructions or a story, I just have this involuntary scenario in my mind's eye. There is just a lot happening. I think that's probably quite common for many synesthetes.
Yeah.
I think it maybe taps more into like hyperphantasia, possibly, which is like having a lot of visual imagination and just everything you hear is suddenly a shape or form or something. Yeah. The other question we received is, I think, a very considered one, and it comes from India. And this person asks, how can we, knowing that a person in our team at work has ADHD, support them, or what should we keep in mind to make the work experience comfortable for all of us?
Oh, that's a very thoughtful question. So I would start off saying there is not a blanket response, because that particular coworker of yours, their needs may be completely different from what I would tell you that my needs are in a work environment. And I think it depends on how open that person is to talking about it. So some people are like terrified to share their ADHD, but I'm assuming if this person knows, then maybe they talk about it a little bit. Ask questions, be curious. A lot of times we can be judgmental over curious. If we're just asking questions, we might learn that there's a very simple tweak that can be made. I hear a lot, and if I'm giving a general kind of response, you know, asking specifically what would help them with this task, what would make it easier, what makes it more difficult. But for many people, what I hear in just a general kind of working office environment, noise and interruption can be a struggle. So they may be like, you know, in the mornings, I'm supposed to attend to however many emails, or I've got to return phone calls. But it's difficult because everyone's kind of doing they're coming in and they're chatting and they've got coffee and they're popping into my office and talking to me. And I cannot get through my task because I keep getting pulled away. And so I've heard them ask things like, can I go sit in the conference room for like half an hour instead of out here in the cubicles and power through these emails? Otherwise, I keep getting behind. I just need that isolation for a little bit. Or, you know, oftentimes we can give really general direction for something, and an ADHDer might need I need a more specific timeline and I need more specific expectations that you're looking from me, not just whenever you get to it. And this is kind of how we want it to look, very vague instructions. So again, I'm kind of describing things that I've heard a lot or that I've experienced, but the big one would be to ask, you know, if y'all are doing a task together, anything that would help this task be easier for you or more efficient? Do you need anything more from me? Do you need any more clarity, any more explanation? Just making it inviting for them to talk to you about what they do need. I think that's the biggest thing, is that a lot of ADHDers are scared to speak up in a work environment.
Yeah.
They don't want to feel shame. They don't want to feel like a burden. They don't want to feel like a child. So just kind of being like, look, speak up if something doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Something I would like to add is, if you asked all these thoughtful questions and they did tell you, so I need more specific instructions or it's too loud for me, then remember that this statement doesn't have an expiry date, because I feel like that's what we do with like experiences that aren't what we experience.
Mm-hmm.
We are very happy to accommodate the person in that situation, but the next time they have to bring it up again, whereas my job could also be to remember it.
Yeah.
Like, and not put an expiry date on it and just be like, okay, they told me that. So that means any kind of noise.
Right.
Doesn't matter if today or in a month or in a different building, it's not going to disappear just because we stopped talking about it.
I love that clarification. I've worked in those settings where an accommodation is made and then there's frustration when that accommodation is still needed. Like, it wasn't like a child and I needed to learn that skill and now I've learned it and I've moved on. Like, no, this is a forever piece of me, of how I function. I like that clarification.
Thank you so much for your ADHD insight. And I have a special thank you as well for giving me, on our previous call, information about other options, other ethical options about using our clinical knowledge and our mental health professional career in a way. Because when we spoke first, I was a bit confused about what my options are, and seeing you thriving in your own business, supporting people outside the clinical treatment, but having that impact that I, in areas where I want to support people, was very valuable for me. So thank you so much for that.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad we were able to connect and help on that, for sure.
Me too. The power of reels.
I know, it's wild.
Okay, so before we wrap this episode up, I'm going to read a very short Synesthete of the Month story to you.
Okay.
So the winner of, just have to find it, sorry. So many documents open.
I feel that.
Okay. So the winner of Cine of the Month in this month, in May, is Lava. Now, I don't know if that's their official name, but that's at least the name I could find. And they say, in middle school, we had to spell out the alphabet on the board. So I did, but I wrote out the full word color, like blue, red, magenta, earth green, and so on. And my teacher, whose last name tasted of salty vomit, told me that I was wrong completely and kicked me out of class for messing around. Side note, everyone I hated had a faulty taste and color to their names.
Wow.
I think that's a great story. And the salty vomit taste of his last name really got me.
Yes. Wow. That is so fascinating.
I sent them a follow-up question trying to find out if they wrote A, B, C, D, and then the color in addition, or if they just went to the board and wrote down only colors and no letters at all. Because I can imagine, like, if a teacher doesn't know anything about synesthesia and someone just doesn't do the task.
Right.
But writes down colors instead of letters.
Yeah, was earth green the letter G, or was it E for earth green? Yeah.
So it must have been something like that. I think that's hilarious. But what I also really like, and I think that tells us a lot about our gut feeling and the things we don't really have words for, that people we dislike, for a person to taste synesthesia or for a person to color synesthesia, that even though maybe I'm, as a child as well, not really, I don't know why I don't like that person, or I don't know at all what kind of affection I feel towards that person. But this involuntary automatic response your body and brain is giving you already puts them, well, not puts them in a box, but gives you a hint of we don't trust that person.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. It kind of guides that gut response that you may not have quite figured out yet, but it's separated them out.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how amazing is our brain? And I think that's something that both of us can keep in mind for the work with clients, to really embrace that and not suppress it, like let clients really express that kind of aspect of their perception, because like it holds a lot of expertise.
Yeah, it really does. And it's amazing to me that this is something that's fairly well known around with psychologists, but layman folk and even like therapists, we're not trained in this at all. So it's just brand new information.
Well, I also didn't learn about it in university. So it was also more of the personal experience that made me realize that. Cool. Thank you so much, Candon. It was a pleasure to talk to you. And thank you for all the great things and advice and your, what was it called? Go-kart? No.
My racetrack, yeah.
Racetrack, exactly. Okay. Thank you so much and have a lovely day and speak soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Let's Talk Synesthesia. There'll be a new episode of Series 1 every Tuesday. If you enjoyed listening, you can like, follow and share. Details about the podcast and how to connect with today's speakers can be found in the show notes. The executive producer was Micah Pricing, with music by Karen Anderson, and the podcast was supported by a couple more neurodivergent people in the background. See you next week.